In this passage, there's three things that are happening in this passage. The first thing is Jesus goes up onto a mountain and prays. And then when he comes down, he looks at all of his disciples. We tend to think of Jesus as having 12 disciples, right? That's often we think of the 12 disciples. But in fact, he had tons of disciples, people who were following him everywhere he went. And he looked at all of the 12 and he chose 12 of them. And he said, you 12, you're going to be apostles. And then there's this huge crowd, which includes all those disciples and all sorts of other people as well. And they all come to hear him and be healed by him, and power comes out of him, and everybody who's there is healed. And there's a lot in this story that is very parallel to, in the Old Testament, Moses going up onto the mountain to hear from God and then coming down off the holy mountain to share with the people what he had heard. And in a lot of ways, that's what's happening here. The way that Luke tells this story, Jesus goes up this mountain where he spends the night in prayer, hearing from God. And when he comes down, two things happen. First, he takes 12 of the people who have been following him. He plucks them out of the crowd and he says, you 12 are going to be my apostles. And then he continues to teach and heal everybody who's around in the crowd. It says at the very end, power came out of him and he healed all of them. I think that's just, we shouldn't read too much into it as in like, hey, there's this power that's coming out like flames or like magic spells or something like that. But it's more a case of the Holy Spirit is with him, and the Holy Spirit doesn't just stay contained in Jesus in us when the Holy Spirit is in us, but it flows out and reaches into the crowd and to the people who need healing, the people who need to be freed from demonic possession, all of those things that are happening. And so Jesus comes down and he chooses 12 to be apostles. And the first question we might go is, what the heck is an apostle? And if you've been around churches for a while, maybe you go, well, there's the 12 apostles. What do you mean? What is an apostle? But why is an apostle different from a disciple? And what was it about these 12 that made them special compared to everybody else? And so I just want to take a moment and just say, okay, so apostles, first off, are still disciples. A disciple, in its most simplistic form, a disciple is somebody who follows. Somebody who says, you're a teacher who I can learn from. So I'm going to follow around. I'm going to watch what you do. I'm going to listen to what you say, and I'm going to learn from you that way. And so everybody, the 12 who were apostles, they're also still disciples. They're still following. The word apostle, it was used in Greek to mean like an envoy in the Septuagint, the Greek version of the Hebrew Bible. It was used to mean those who were sent out. Even today, you'll hear people use the word apostle. Often they mean people who were sent out as missionaries or as church planters. But it has, the Greek word for apostle has the word of being sent. So it was like Jesus said, okay, you 12, you're the 12 that I'm going to send. But here's the thing. He doesn't actually send them that day, or the next day, or the next year, or the year after that. There's really nothing that changes. They've been called apostles, and it's like it means nothing to start with. There's absolutely no discernible reason for this name at this time in Luke's gospel or anywhere in the near future in Luke's gospel. And I was thinking about that, how maybe these 12, they're like, oh yeah, we're the apostles, and nothing. And I was thinking about how much that resonates with me, and I'm sure that sometimes resonates with you, that sometimes we have this sense that maybe God has called us or God has something for us, and maybe we can put a name to it and maybe we can't put a name to it. Maybe sometimes it's just like, God, there's got to be more purpose in my life than just this. Sometimes that's what it is. But then we have this sense of call, or we have this sense of being sent, or of mission, maybe we use that word, or of purpose. And then nothing happens. And we go, well, what's the point? When God called me to be a pastor, he called me to seminary, and then he called me to be a pastor. And then I graduated from seminary, and nobody wanted to hire me. I know you find that so hard to believe. But there weren't a lot of churches looking for women to be pastors, young women to be pastors, or me to be their pastor. And it was like, I was watching the people that I had graduated from seminary with get invited to interviews and calls and all of this, and there was nothing, and there was nothing. And I was living temporarily at my parents' house because I had nothing. And I remember having a conversation at the time. We had these people who, their name was Area Minister, and they were like pastors to pastors, and they would oversee large groups of pastors. And I remember sitting down with our area minister and going, so should I just look for a different career? Like, do I get a job that's just in something else now? Because clearly there's nothing coming my way here. And he was no help whatsoever. He just said, well, you should do what you think is right. Like, I don't know what is right here. It was so frustrating. And I know some of you know what that's like, right? And it was so frustrating. And I graduated in April, and I was working at a summer camp. And so I was at the camp all summer long, and nothing, crickets, and so many conversations with God, like being like, God, you made me go to seminary, and there, you said, no, Elaine, I know that you think that you're going to be a chaplain, because I was essentially going, okay, one of the things I never do is public speak, so that rules out some careers. And God worked miracles in me to get me to the point where I was like, no, I accept this calling to be a pastor. I'm like, God, you went to a lot of work, and I went to a lot of work to learn how to do this, to be willing to be a pastor. And now what? For nothing? What kind of God is this? Who would do all of that work, who would make me do all of that work for nothing. And the summer went, and the summer went, and the summer went, and I was like, okay, like, September's coming. Camp only runs till the end of August. September's coming. I have no job. I have no idea what on earth I'm supposed to do. And the very last week of camp, a camper came up with a letter from their grandparent who was on a search committee to say, hey, would you consider applying to this job? And of course I said yes, because I was like, what else am I going to do, right? It was not a very holy moment. And the reality is that that ended up being a place that I served as a pastor for 17 years. And not just because it was the only place hiring. It really was a place that I was called to. But I tell you all that because I was that in-between time, that waiting time. I feel like the apostles, they've got this moment, and Jesus comes down off the mountain. He picks those 12 as Jesus, right? And he's like, imagine you're them, right? You're like, Jesus picked me, and he said, I'm an apostle now, and I don't really know what that means. Said he's sending me, but he didn't say where or when, and nothing has changed. And then next week, nothing has changed, and nothing has changed. He's treating me just like everybody else. What the heck is this about? And I think sometimes we feel that way, right? We're in that in-between time where God has called, or God has named you something, or God has made a promise, and it just, nothing happens. And you start to question if you actually heard it right, maybe. You start to question what's going on. Is God cruel? Sometimes we think God's mean. Like, he lifts us up and for what? Just to watch us fall again? Our brain can take us in all these different directions in that time of waiting. Now, eventually, these are the apostles who get sent out, who the Holy Spirit, the first ones to receive the Holy Spirit, who get sent out, and they go to the four corners of the Greco-Roman world, and they plant churches, and they share the gospel, and they're responsible for the story of Jesus spreading far and wide, eventually. But right now, nothing. And this is compared to the 12, and now there were 12 of them, and 12 of them is not an accident. Again, like, Jesus went up like Moses and came down and he named 12. There were 12 tribes of Israel, and there are now 12 apostles, 12 that are plucked out. It's like Jesus has gone up and he's heard from God and he said, okay, things are going to change now. The leadership, the way Israel has been led, it's gone so far from my will. I'm bringing in 12 new to replace the old. And these 12 apostles, they are the 12 tribes of Israel, are Jesus establishing new leadership. There's a judgment here against Israel's leadership at the time. Now, disciples are those who, at the moment, just seem like people who are there for what they can get from Jesus, right? They keep coming to him, and some of them, it's interesting, Luke calls some of them disciples, and some of them are just the multitude, the crowd, and we don't really know what the difference is. Everybody's following him because there's a chance they're going to get some really good learning, but there's also a chance they're going to get healed, or somebody they love is going to get healed, or freed from some kind of demonic possession, or something good happens when you hang out with Jesus. The power just kind of flows out of him, and it's great to be in his presence. And I was thinking about that too, because I was thinking about how we talk about being a disciple as being a follower of Jesus. That's a word we use often to talk about what it means to be a disciple. The word disciple isn't a word people use a lot in the regular world, right? So if you go up to somebody, I'm a disciple of Jesus, they might not have a clue what you're talking about. But I'm a follower of Jesus. I try and emulate the way that Jesus lives. I try and live by the same values as Jesus taught and Jesus modeled. That we kind of understand. So a lot of times people choose to use the word, I'm a follower of Jesus, instead of I'm a disciple of Jesus. But I think we miss something in that. And I think even these people, these crowds of people who were called disciples, they didn't fully get it yet. Because right now they were following for what they could get. But a point is going to come when they're going to actually start being changed. There's a big Christian word we use. The word is called sanctified. And don't let that word, you don't even have to remember that word. All it means is that as we follow Jesus, as we learn to live like Jesus did, as we take Jesus' teaching seriously, as we trust that we are a forgiven people, that we are a healed people, we change. That the Holy Spirit lives in us, that the Holy Spirit makes his way into us. And the Holy Spirit is just like the Spirit of Jesus living in us and transforms us. We don't just stay the same as we follow along after Jesus, like we're playing Follow the Leader or Simon Says or something like that. I don't know. Do you all know Simon Says? It's a children's game. Simon Says, lift your hands above your head, and you do that. And Simon Says, put your hands down, and you put them down. And then the leader tricks you and goes, lift your hands up. And if they're going fast enough, everybody goes up and you go, ah, you're out. Ha ha ha. Because Simon didn't say, right? And so sometimes we treat following Jesus like we're playing Simon Says. And we just have to do the things. But there's this whole other aspect that as true disciples, the Holy Spirit lives in us and is actually changing us, draws our attention to areas of sin in our life, convicts us of places that need to be swept clean, gives us these gifts in one of the letters that Paul wrote to the church at one point. He talked about these things, he called them fruits of the Spirit. And it just means, like, think about the Holy Spirit living in you as this tree that lives in you, and it has all these different, it's not just an apple tree or just an orange tree, it has all sorts of different fruits. And the longer it's allowed to grow inside of you, the more of these fruits it come out and are able to become part of you. And so there's gentleness, there's peace, there's self-discipline, there's humility, there's all these different fruits of the Holy Spirit living in us that change us to make us more and more and more like Jesus. And that's really what being a disciple is. Being a disciple might start with, I want to be around Jesus to get as much as I can from him because he does these amazing miracles. But it becomes something more. And I think that's a difference between when we just talk about the crowds of people who were attracted to Jesus and the real disciples of Jesus. And then among those disciples, he takes them and he says, you are my apostles and I'm sending you out. Now, when we talk about apostles, historically, there are two different opinions about the question, are there apostles today? Were there just those 12 apostles or were there more? And are there any people who are apostles today? These sent ones, these ones sent by Jesus. So the first viewpoint on this is, no, these were very unique people that encountered Jesus, that lived with Jesus, that witnessed Jesus firsthand, witnessed his resurrection firsthand, and became apostles. And they were the ones who started the churches all over the known world at the time. And these were the people that weren't just restricted to the 12, because at one point, here's a thing, thing. At one point towards the end of the gospel, we read about how Judas Iscariot, he betrayed Jesus. He doesn't get to be an apostle anymore. And so the disciples, they all gather around and they go, well, there should be 12 of us, 12 tribes of Israel, 12 apostles. So they appoint somebody else who's been there from the beginning and name that person an apostle. And then later the apostle Paul has this dramatic experience with Jesus. He was on a road. He was heading to this place called Damascus, and he was literally knocked off his horse by a vision of Jesus, of the resurrected Jesus. And so that experience of the resurrected Jesus led him to call himself, I am also an apostle. And he said, I am the last apostle. And so we might say, apostles were a thing then, and they aren't a thing now. Some people say, actually, until Jesus returns, being an apostle is a gift that continues. So just like some are called to be pastors, some are called to be teachers, some are called to be servers, some are called to hospitality and various different things, some are called to be apostles. And that is a gift that continues, that's not tied to having witnessed in person Jesus' resurrection the way that those first 12, but it's a gift that God keeps giving, that the Holy Spirit keeps giving to some people to be the people who are sent out very much towards church planting, very much towards traditional understanding of what being a missionary is, the sent ones. It tends to be applied to people who are called to, say, go to another country as a missionary or another place as a missionary or a church planter. And so we have these two, in today's opinions, we have these two different ways of thinking about this word apostle. Here's where I come at it. Apostles are those who are sent by Jesus to share the gospel. And I think that we are all sent by Jesus to share the gospel. And I think that we get so caught up in what word can you use and what word can you not use. And Christians can get caught up. We say, get caught up in deciding how many angels can fit on the head of a pin, right? Like we get so caught up in minutiae and things that don't actually really super matter. I think what matters here is that we are sent. We are called, we are invited by Jesus to be disciples. And sometimes that journey starts just because we're really attracted to Jesus or to Jesus' community, and that what can we get there? We get belonging, maybe. We get healing, we get hope, we get encouragement, whatever it is that we get. And then we start to realize that the more that we're in the presence of Jesus, the more we are open to Jesus being in our lives, we discover, I'm not the same as I was when this journey started. We recognize that it's not just a consumerist kind of thing where what can I get? How much can I get of this thing that is Jesus? It's about saying, Jesus, this real person who freed me from sin, who has freed me from death, who loves me unconditionally, has sent his spirit, and somehow that spirit made space for himself inside of me, and I'm different than I was. I find myself actually wanting to figure out how to forgive people who are my enemies, who have harmed me. Let me tell you, that is not a natural human thing to do. That's a Holy Spirit-inspired thing to do. I find myself patient. I find myself loving people who normally I would not love at all. I find myself seeking ways to serve. I find myself gentler than I used to be. All of these changes that we start to see in ourselves, in our relationships, we recognize that just going to Jesus to get stuff from Jesus, all of a sudden we're being changed by being in the presence of Jesus. That's what it is to be a disciple. And that the goal, the hope, my hope is that all of us get to a point where it doesn't just surprise us. It doesn't just happen by accident. But we actually seek to nurture that change. We actually seek to nurture that Holy Spirit that's living in us. And we do that by reading the Bible, by talking about what we're reading, by spending time in prayer for ourselves, but also praying for other people, figuring out how we can help serve other people, just living in the ways that Jesus lived. We start to change. We start to become these true disciples. And as we become true disciples, we discover that we are also sent. Maybe just sent to your job. Maybe just sent to your neighborhood. But we are all sent. At the very end of every single worship service that I say words like these, and now wherever you are going to be this week, may God bless you. Or, and then there's words of blessing. It's called the benediction in the order of service. It's ascending, because none of us, not even Debbie and I, just stay here all week long. We're all sent somewhere, right? We're sent among the workers in our parents' nursing home. We're sent among our school. We're sent among our jobs. We're sent into our neighborhoods, into our grocery stores, into wherever we're sent. And we take the Holy Spirit with us. And I think, how cool would it be if everywhere we went, people said of us, because we go immersed and filled with the Holy Spirit, like they said of Jesus, everyone in the crowd was trying to touch. I'm not praying that everybody tries to touch you. That's inappropriate. But I am praying that they experience Jesus. They experience the power of the Holy Spirit just by your presence, just by our presence. And in that way, are we not all apostles? Sent by Jesus, to bring Jesus, to be the presence of the Holy Spirit.